The 2017 AFL season is proudly brought to you by Toyota. Toyota footy. Oh, what a feeling.
Triple M footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
For the Fiat Professional promotion, until June 30, get 3 years free servicing, 5 years warranty, and 5 years roadside assist on select vans. Conditions apply. Learn more at fiat.com.au.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Rub.
For McDonald's Chicken Big Mac,
Triple M rocks footy.
Oh, now what about this one? We're at the Triple MCG for Sydney and Richmond. Richmond flying, and the Swannies have won four of their last five, so this has got plenty about it. Beautiful day in Melbourne. What about the weather we're having? It's just extraordinary. Best city in the world, of course, and we can't wait for this big game. And big guest coming your way too, John Longmire, coach of the Sydney Swans. Nick Riewoldt's going to be in here after a very nice performance by the Saints last night. Nick Vlosten is not playing for Richmond. We're going to have him in the box here as well. Something you don't know from Bristol, he's just parked himself on a couple of things here, and the vault changes. It's a different version of the vault this time. Not just light-hearted Bristle. This one, suddenly, he gets his eye in and gives someone a verbal clubbing. He clubs someone verbally to death in the vault. That's coming up in about half an hour as I look around the room. Very nice to have Ryan back and doing beautiful work, and so is Damo. But our man from Bali, Bristle, fresh back in.
He's browned up.
Looks like he's been in the tanning clinic. The Ducks here. Welcome back, Duck.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are we?
Oh, now, we'll get to last night and talk about North, I guess, because with Rui coming in later, we can cover off the Saints for all of our hundreds of thousands of Saints fans who would have been happy. But a couple of things we need to cover off. I don't know whether you've been aware of this, Duck, in your absence, but there's been just a little nitpicking at our man Bristle about what happens after the game on the Seven Network. Roaming Brian. Yes. We actually started it on this station.
Whispering Brian.
We called it Whispering Brian. And that was a good 15 years ago, and it was a segment that dominated, and then Seven now doing a very good job of it. And Bristle, there have been some critics of, well, some questions asked about it, which I don't think are fair. How have they sat with you during the week?
Look, I don't know. It's a difficult thing.
Oh, I know.
It's not a difficult thing to do. I can't say that, but it is. the hardest thing about walking around the rooms is bumping into people you don't know.
Yep.
And while I sit up in the commentary box three games every weekend and have for the last 20 years, I think I know the players from a perspective of a commentary box. But when you get up close to them, and all of a sudden you can't see their number and you can't see their physical sort of approach of the person, it's a lot more difficult. And then last night, like, run into a couple of gentlemen in suits looking rather official. St Kilda, didn't realise one of them the president, the lowest profile president ever in the history of football. Yep. You bump it into the... That's the hard thing about it, not quite
Bristle,
knowing who they are.
I totally agree with you, because I'll put my hand high and say that after 10 years of being the president of one club, I still didn't know everyone in the rooms. And at one stage, beautiful Carly, who's done the apparel down there, you know, the players' gear for years, a magnificent lady, needed a bit of a hand taking stuff out and putting it on the truck. And I said, well, give me one of those bags. And I said, you've already got a bloke over there helping you. She said, no, that's Kane Turner. He was the emergency guy. I didn't even know it was KT that come in late for his first game. So you're not expected to know everyone. I think that's a nonsense. And secondly, for me, Damo, this is what I am fearful of in our caper. And that is television. I was saying this to you before. Television, where you're watching and you don't know what's going to happen next, for me, is liquid gold.
Yep.
And there's virtually none of it left in 2017, because we're so vanilla and we're so prepackaged and everyone's so terrified of anyone saying the wrong thing or whatever, that you never, ever watch television anymore where you genuinely don't know what's going to happen next. It's why Sam Newman, for 25 years, has been the best act in television, because you watch him still to this day and have no idea what the hell he's going to do next. And for me, that's brilliant.
And see, what we do on Triple M, we normally just spend an hour and a half, 2 hours of hanging you-know-what on each other. I want to be genuine here, BT, when I say... I text you last night and say the same thing? I think what Jim's saying, the awkwardness potentially of what you do in that space, which runs for 8 or 9 minutes, doesn't it, Duck? Where you just let him roam. The awkwardness, Jim, it either is awkward or it's potentially awkward. That is just fascinating viewing. And the fact you don't know the names, it makes for that moment, BT.
I'm not saying this because I obviously work at the same station, sitting there watching it live every Friday night, but I love it as well. I really do. I just think it's... It's fascinating TV. And I also think that...
People are having a crack because I went into a room that had nothing in it last night. Well, guess what? Before I went into the room, I didn't know it had nothing in it. I just went there.
But you handled that moment well. You walk, we're into this room now, and your dad's got nothing in it. And then you wheel around. But BT, it's seriously, as GBC, it's not scripted TV in a world where everything is written down in advance of what they're about to say.
And the questions that BT ask, and some, and what's great about it as well, you're not just talking to the stars. The fans out there, even though BT might know them at the start, he knows them certainly after he asks them a question. And the people out there get to meet these younger kids that we don't normally hear speak. And the questions that he's asking are easy questions, just like, you know, how'd you pull up? How'd you find the game? Very simple questions.
And Unlikely to stump them.
That's right. And we get to hear those kids speak. I think it's great.
Except that you probably shouldn't have gone back on when you got back up to the main booth because you hadn't done your fly-up when you went back on.
I heard about this.
Hang on.
You hadn't, BT. And we're being inundated with tweets today reminding us of this.
Said, come across here quickly. I was getting dressed. It's not my fault.
Was your fly down?
My plan was to not go back on TV.
Bristol.
My fly was down because I was half-dressed. I'd only just got it done up, and then I had to hold my hand over
Did you have the tadge out or not? This is what I'm hearing, having not seen it on live television.
I had to box up because I had to box up, and that's why I did, if anyone's wondering.
Now, but Jim, Ducks fight up.
Well, we need to move from that because we put that one to bed. I love it. And not everyone does, but not everyone loves anything. So, bloody
I love it.
He's come swaggering back in from Bali he's not happy with a piece of the landscape.
Well, I tell you what happened, boys. I've obviously, as you know, I was away last week. So, on the plane back, midnight flight, I've got a 2.5-year-old. I get her to bed. Get her to sleep on the plane, and I start writing my article. Well, I'm 3/4 of the way through it. I was writing it from the pool to start with, and then it sort of extended onto the plane. So I'm sort of finishing it off, and I'm thinking, wow, and I'm keeping my eye on the media, and I'm thinking, okay, so this is all good. No one's really written this. People have spoken about it.
This sounds like someone else who used to sit in that chair about their articles they write.
But this fascination started long, long, long ago. And I'm talking way before this man.
Is someone copying
the duck? His name's Matthew Lloyd.
Hello.
Right? Come on, Velvet.
No. So many years ago, when I'm walking out of a sort of a club, Many years ago, this car pulls up. I'm waiting for a taxi, just standing there, kicking a can down the road. It's sort of not a great night.
And, unusual.
I'm waiting for a taxi, and this car pulls up full of young gentlemen driving, so not drinking, very sensible, but it was probably 1 a.m.
Yes.
And they pull up, and they say,
wonder what they were doing.
And they go, hey, Duck, King, you know, we'll give you a drive. Where do you live? And I said, well, at the time I was living at Keilor. I said, oh, boys, I live out at Keilor. You're prepared to drive me out there? And that's where these gentlemen were from. They were from out that way. They said, jump in. We'll, you know, give us a lift. So I get in the back, and anyway, they drop me off, and, you know, they're trying to sort of talk footy and conversation. I wasn't giving them a lot. And then as I'm getting out, one of the young gentlemen says, hey, you know who this guy in the back seat is? And I said, well, no. And they said, this is Matthew Lloyd, and he's going to be a star. He's going to be... And I went, yeah, good on you, mate. Anyway, so I get out. Go into the house. He hadn't been drafted or done anything
talking
in this.
Talking to the king here.
So there's only six guys who kick more goals in this game.
So I go into the... I go home, and then I don't hear of this young man for a few years. Then all of a sudden, he hits the scene at Essendon. And guess what? He asked for the number 18.
Duck.
So all of a sudden, Lloyd...
Hang on.
Come on, Duck.
He didn't ask for the 18 because of that meeting.
Now it's sort of built. This sort of story is building and building and building. I'm thinking, okay, well, that's fair enough. He obviously...
Hope it builds soon.
He obviously idolised me. So he's gone and got the number 18.
Where are you going with this?
An absolute champion of the game. Where I'm going with it is not only that. So I get off the plane and then...
Back to the present.
So then yesterday, I'd sort of pick up The Age and I look at my article and I go, that's...
Were you in the sun too
That's
long?
Fantastic. The Age probably. I made the front and the back page of The Age and, because I basically said Damien Hardwick...
They're almost the same thing.
Most things do these days.
So Damien...
Not a lot in between, JB. And by the way, it's lucky to make the street.
Yes.
So I get to the footy last night, and then something bobs up on my Twitter feed, and Matthew Lloyd, and clearly there's a bit of a fascination. So Matthew Lloyd has written pretty much an identical...
You're saying he copied you?
An identical article that is in today's paper for the Herald Sun.
Hang on.
And it is almost carbon copy of that. And to top it off...
But he would have written it way
before.
What's
it about?
And to top it off, it's about Damien Hardwick being the... both think that he's right now the coach of the year. And the way he's turned the footy club around, blah, blah, blah. But it's basically word for word.
So two guys can have the same opinion.
So then I'm driving into the ground today and I'm not happy. So I'm driving down...
Not happy about Lloydie.
Well, I'm not happy that he's copied my article. And I'm driving...
How could he have copied it if they're both released at the same time?
They're not, because mine went in yesterday. His has gone in today.
Yes, but I've got to pull
you
up there.
No, how do you know that?
Anyway, as if Lloydie would base his article on what you've written.
Well, of course he would, because he's boring.
Dark, please.
And
no, he's not. The last thing he'd do is that.
So then I'm driving down Toorak Road this morning. Now, you know, there's a lot of cafes and hairdressers and everything else. There I am. I sort of walk past, and there's Lloydie getting a haircut.
Oh,
and he's asked the hairdresser to cut a hole in the top of his head.
Oh, no.
Just so he's like me.
Oh, no.
Can you believe it?
So not only is it about the same story.
Oh, Duck likes it. The top of his head.
I get the feeling that Duck is liking that story far too much.
Look at him.
It isn't actually that, you know, for the funny.
Oh, crumb. I wondered where it was going.
Boy,
all in fun, Lloydie. No, he would have, you're right.
More
he would have
to do about the duck than it did Lloydie.
A lot more.
Well, let's hope he... let's hope he
might have made the point a bit better than you do.
Let's hope he doesn't copy. I think he had a good chance to read it and then maybe change it.
I think he pre-writes them a few days before and submits, so there's been a bit of a mess up there.
Yeah.
But okay. I think it's, you know, you're both on the track, so well done.
You wouldn't have read either article,
no. Couldn't give a stuff.
Hey, we got to talk about last night, as I say. For Saints fans, we've got Nick Revolt coming in later, so we will cover Nick and the Saints off for you later on. Very disappointing North Melbourne last night, Purple. Especially the first 40 minutes. They couldn't handle the pressure that was brought by St Kilda at all and couldn't bring any pressure of their own. Yeah. And that will be the thing that's very disappointing for Brad Scott. You can be outclassed by teams that are better than you are by foot and hand and skillfully, but when you're horrendously out-muscled, like I thought North were last night early in the game, that will be very, very disappointing.
And facing a vulnerable opponent, as St Kilda was going into the game, having lost its previous three, and with injury concerns around their two key backmen, Revolt back into the team, Joey Montagna clearly annoyed during the week. So they had a lot of things going against them. And the problem for North now, Jim, and I want to delve into your space with this, given your connection with that footy club. I thought the third quarter against Richmond, the previous match they played before the bye in round 11, was shocking. I know the margin was only 6 goals in the end, and again, last night it was less than 3 goals somehow, but those two performances back-to-back, I know Richmond's a far better opponent to this point of this season than St Kilda, but I think it's a bit of a worry now that there's still a lot of footy left for 2017.
Well, to be brutally honest, with what we did to the list last year, Duck, I thought we'd see a bit more of this. I actually think they've held up really well.
Yeah,
in the first half of the year.
I think they expected it wasn't going to be as good as it is.
I totally agree. So when I watched last night, I was as disappointed as any rusted on North person. But cool light of day, I thought, you know, I expected a lot more of that sort of stuff to come out of this season with the five players that exited last year. So credit to Brad and Jack Zeeble and everyone for the way they've held up. But you still, I thought what last night did, Duck, was shone a great big spotlight on the areas that North are very deficient.
Yep.
It's no wonder they're going so hard after Josh Kelly. Outside run and class by foot, it was just exposed last night. At halftime, Duck,
it's not there.
They were 30 points down or whatever they were. Contested footy, I think they were behind by one. So they're still winning it at the source. But as soon as it gets outside, they just got opened up like a can of sardines.
That's exactly what it was. And we said it in the call last night, PT. I also thought St Kilda were just a little bit harder. I know contested footy
might have been very similar, but
I thought St Kilda were just a little bit harder, a little bit more desperate early. But I totally agree. I think the outside, what St Kilda did, at times North Melbourne were like bees to a honeypot. They were all in there.
Yep.
Then the ball spilled out, and then St Kilda had their runners on the outside. And not only that, St Kilda's efficiency, the way they used the footy, was just way superior. Yep. North Melbourne butchered it. And then when they did have that little bit of a sniff in the third quarter, BT, going inside 50, they just turned it over.
They just could not find a target at all.
And they were not under a great deal of pressure on those occasions.
The big picture of both these teams is they're at different stages of their prep to compete at the top end. You know, St Kilda are on the way up and only about probably a third of the way there, maybe halfway there at this stage. I'm not sure that North have actually bottomed out yet,
no,
JB, in terms of, you know, those players they've had over the last couple of years. So I think they're both heading in different directions, not being disparaging towards North Melbourne, but I just think they're now trying to rebuild and go again. So
they had a long time up, and you're right, you've got to go down to go up in this competition. I think the outside run is a huge issue that they're going to they're trying to address with Kelly, but they'll need to address in the draft or somehow. The other issues for me, Duck and Bristol and Purple, are a small pressure forward, a Puopolo. You know, I mean, you look at Kane Turner, at Tay Garner, at Jed Anderson last night. You know, the way the ball just trampolined out of North Melbourne's forward 50 would be a huge concern to the coaching staff. Got to get better at that, because otherwise it just resulted in scores at the other end. And the third bit for me, I mean, I know Lachie Hansen didn't have a good night, which is a shame in his 150th, but an intercept marking defender. At the moment, Robbie Tarrant's the only one that does it, and he's got to play on the opposition's best player, so he's not the right person to be doing it. And Easton Wood, you know, a Jeremy Howe, I know, is the one in the out of the box, but someone who can intercept Mark in the back half is another priority already.
Yeah, I agree. And without looking at the exact stats, you know, last night, the tackles inside 50 for St Kilda, inside their forward 50, St Kilda had at one stage 11.
Oh, no, you bikes put a graphic up. I reckon it was 14-2 or something.
Kangaroos had 11, so it might have ended up 14-2. So, you know, that, and as you said, that's those smaller forwards that can put pressure on and also kick goals. You're right. They just don't have that. But the guys that we do have up there at the moment, when I say we, North Melbourne, they're not quite. I mean, Wood and these guys, they haven't quite got enough footy into them yet, but they do have to show. If you're not getting the footy, then you at least have to be putting that pressure on, and they didn't do that last night.
And the other thing about this game, non-playing-wise, is the crowd. Now, this was the lowest crowd since 2001 for a Friday night game for North Melbourne.
26,000.
Now, listen, North Melbourne supporters.
Hang on, BT, can I just say, when it comes to an Etihad Stadium game, right, and let's... This is St Kilda's stadium as well.
Yeah.
Now, I know it's not their home game, but don't just hang this on North Melbourne. The St Kilda supporters didn't turn up last night either.
Well, hang on,
now, this is a side about to apparently maybe play in finals footy. So don't just put it on North Melbourne.
I haven't yet.
The St Kilda fans, well, you were.
You're about
I saw
to.
You write it down.
You were.
I'm about to.
Yeah.
So listen, now you've had your say, I'll have my say. North Melbourne supporters, you've got to go and support your team. You're there crying when you don't get inserted into a blockbuster game that is created. Hey, listen, when you're down, if you can't bring a crowd, you ain't getting blockbuster games, because blockbuster games only survive from clubs that can produce a crowd no matter where they are on the ladder. It's time you went and supported your team. Last night's turn up, it was your home game. Don't put it on to St Kilda, Duck. It was North's home game. They bring the majority of the crowd. The crowd was a disgrace.
Well, they are in a blockbuster game now, Good Friday, which there was a good crowd, and they're staying there.
And they're a fair chance to screw that up.
Nah, Bristol, that's permanent.
He's
that's
got a real, you know what?
He's got a North Melbourne hater,
he's got a real
hatred. He's always
hatred.
Has
no,
been.
Don't
you
turn me into North hater.
Always has been, Bristol.
I love North.
Wasn't there a
real... No, you don't. Get him.
I thought there was a slight bias in his call last night.
Well, that's... But long been said about North Melbourne fans. Bristol, for some reason, doesn't like us. Bit of news, Purple. What's kicking around?
Continuing concerns for Jagger O'Meara at Hawthorn. Jim, we know he played rounds 1, 2, and 3. Damaged the problematic knee in that third round game. Missed two games after that. Came back for round 6. Couldn't get through the game. Hasn't been seen since. And as we speak, not yet locked into having a return game of football this year. For the record, Hawthorn is saying that he will be playing football again in 2017, but there obviously are significant concerns, BT, given he's only played the 4 games of the 12 to this point. And the way the Hawthorn season is shaping, there may well be a question to be asked, is there any point in getting him back if he's not quite right? But before
they've been guarded about what type of injury it is. I mean, patellar tendon was the previous injury. This, to me, is sounding very much like wear, tear, meniscus issue.
Yep.
To me, Adam Cooney style, and a lot of other past players that have now moved on, if that is the case, he's in real trouble, yeah. Adam Cooney style, I reckon.
Yeah, and again, we don't, as a rule, venture into the medical space because we're not experts and we're obviously not privy to the exact information that Hawthorn's got in front of it. But what you've just said there is legitimate. It is a real concern. It is the same problem or same area in which has caused him, Duck, to miss the full two seasons prior to this one and one that's now had him only playing four of the 12 games to this point.
So the buyer beware thing is real here, Purple, isn't it? I mean, you look at Brett Delidio and GWS, you look at Daniel Wells and Collingwood, and you look at Jago O'Meara and Hawthorn, all three examples of banged-up players that clubs rolled the dice with, basically. Yep. Said, well, we think we're going to be able to get them right. And Wells, he's played some very good footy for Collingwood, but I don't know how many games out of the...
Probably half.
About half. He's the best of them. Isn't he? The other two.
Yeah, well, it hasn't been seen, and O'Meara's played the four, but two of those four have been games where he's actually got injured within them. So, and it's a buy beware situation, Jim, and you use the term roll the dice. Obviously, we know that the reason St Kilda's got the Hawthorn pick in the draft this year is because of the transactioning around getting O'Meara in. But look, Luke Hodges is obviously more privy to what's going on than we are, and he was on Triple M Footy last night and said this about Jager.
Well, we're sitting 17th on the ladder. You want to make sure if he's coming into play, he's confident, he's really confident with his body and his mind's in a good space. So I think that's their priorities, making sure this bloke's going to be playing at the footy club for the next 8 or 10 years, not rushing him back just because they're getting a little bit of media pressure on him. They're very confident that he's given him a little bit of time, he's back running again, that they're saying he's confident he'll play this year. I'd prefer to miss him for half a year or 20 games if he can play for 8 years. That is the priority of getting him in because he's the bloke he is, the player that we saw throughout the pre-season, when he gets his body right, he'll be a gun for the Hawthorn Footy Club.
The question for me on the back of that is, would Hawthorn have got him in, would they have done the deal if they had known he was going to miss a year, basically?
Basically.
I don't reckon they would have.
I'm with you on that. Now, they're adamant that, as Hodgie said, it's an 8 to 10 year project, but even if that is the case, 1 year has almost been removed from that scenario just before we even start. And the conditioning side of it is the issue. And look, Rowan White is on later on today, and we might ask him before the game starts as to what he's heard about this matter. But what I've been told, they cannot get the load up and for the load to be sustainable in order for him to have impact. There'll be times where he can train the house down. There'll be times where he might even come back and play and be close to best on ground. But backing it up is going to be the real concern. Luke Beveridge has spoken today before the Bulldogs game against Melbourne tomorrow. It's a really big game there. A lot of commentary, Duck and BT and Jim, emerging in recent weeks about the potential of a premiership hangover. The last team to not make the finals after a flag was Hawthorn in 08, not making it in 09. Luke Beveridge not having a part of this talk, though.
I'm aware of some of the external commentary. It's so far from reality, it's not funny. I mentioned earlier in the piece how happy we were with how the players returned from their break. You know, we were a month behind training-wise, but we were a month advanced when you consider we played for an extra month. So I haven't thought that was, you know, going to be such a big issue, and I still don't. A club that wins a flag after 62 years in a pretty young group, you know, they're going to have their own challenges mentally. It's got nothing to do with application.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that, and I've heard a couple of players interviewed during the week, and apparently all of their times, and we hear this every year, but all of their times were better than the year before. So, you know, they, in terms of fitness and everything else, they were advanced on that. So, for me, they've brought in some players. Then this is we know that from one premiership year to the next year, you need turnover.
Yep.
We all know that, and Hawthorn have had that in their premiership years. Although they've probably been the one team that have sort of kept the majority.
They added,
added little bits and pieces here and there. But so you need turnover. But what for me, especially with a young group, and they were a very young premiership team. You've got like guys like Murphy. They thought they were going to get Cramery back. They had obviously Cloak to the footy club. So all of a sudden, you know, the Redpath Adams was, you know, going to be better. Suckling was injured towards the end of the last year. So all of a sudden, the guys look at the group and they say, well, as a whole, we are stronger.
Yep.
Now, does that put them mentally into a little bit of a false sense of security? I'm not sure. Only they can answer that as individuals. And as he said, as a young group, that's their challenge, how they mentally prepare from week to week and from season to season. But for me, looking at them from the outside, I just don't think they've found their right balance. They've brought Cloak in. Clearly, that hasn't worked great. It worked early. That big man, Tom Boyd. Now, look, he's probably escaped a little bit of the spotlight. We've spoken a few times about him earlier in the year. He hasn't got back to anywhere near his grand final or preliminary final form. We thought he was going to go on with it. So there's been plenty of reasons. I think he has to settle his team.
Do you?
I think he's thrown it around that much, and he's made a lot of changes this week, BT.
Another five this week.
But do you think they've got to? Do you think they've got to start to settle this team in going forward?
All of the ingredients, I think, have only been on the table once. It was round two or three or four, somewhere about there, where they had everyone available, including Cramery. Other than that, they just haven't been able to get them all available at the same time. Having said that, dealing with what you got, I agree with Duck, time to settle them down. Just on Marcus Adams, when I went to Perth on, when was it, Wednesday, he was actually on the plane, said that, sitting very close to him, said that he wouldn't be back until week one of the final. So I reckon you can probably write him off.
He's amongst the finest interviewers of our time.
I'm ungettable.
When he's on the clock, Parko, Denton and Oakes take notice.
I am the man.
He's one of the best.
This is about me.
Is Bristol's Vault.
We are here, by the way, for Richmond and Sydney, and that's going to be fantastic. But it's Vault time. And the first sort of seven or eight episodes, Purple, it's fair to say we took a light-hearted look at the early Bristol interviewing stylings.
Bumbling Bristol.
And a legal look. This is illegal.
George Foreman, Nadia Comaninch, then Greg Louganis, Carl Lewis, Shane Heal and Jeff Malcolm.
And George Foreman again.
Mm-hmm. I think she did want to be known as Nadia Comaninch.
No, Comaninch. And then Dar Davies, a bike rider no one's ever heard of. Leroy Burrell.
Larry Burrell.
And then a 3 years here, good sports on Valentine's Day snippet of the way Bristol just operated.
That's right.
Outside of the interviewing space, which we love too. So what we'll do is we'll take you back just for 30 seconds and get you to enjoy what we've already heard on the Vault.
What sort of a motorcycle are we using?
Well, for one, we're not doing bike jumping down here.
Well, that's obviously... Well... Okay, sure. We'll hang on for George there. Yeah, George, you're back? Good morning to you, Larry.
Got a nice warm coffee here anyway to keep us going.
5 seconds, Nadia Comaninch.
Hello.
Was it true that in your first international competition that you failed badly?
Yeah, this was when I had 9 years old.
Yeah. Did you feel like giving up then or not? Hello, are you still there, Da?
Yeah.
Duah diddy diddy.
Nice. I was only nine.
Did you think you should give up? Oh, that is hilarious.
Nice warm cup of coffee anyway to keep us going. So, that's what we've heard so far on the Vault. But this week, hard-hitting Brian takes over. He goes toe-to-toe. I haven't heard this, by the way. An uncomfortable interview with a man called Greg.
Yeah.
Self-appointed Fitzroy Football Club saviour back in 1991. And I'm led to believe, Purple, that our man takes a little hit early, absorbed a bit of early punishment, but then in true Bristol style came storming over the top. And, anyway, enjoy.
The day's sports news. Sports Drive with the greater 3UZ Good Sports.
Yes, and welcome back to the Good Sports. And it's 24-6 on the Good Sports. Let's look at the Fitzroy situation now. And, of course, I think everyone's aware of what's happening with Fitzroy. There was talks of merger around about 10 days ago. Fitzroy on the weekend had a meeting in a warehouse somewhere in Brunswick, Fitzroy area, and invited supporters along to see what they could do to help save the club. The guy that's heading up that particular... that fund for the Fitzroy Football Club is Greg. He joins us now online. Greg, welcome to you.
Thank you, Brian.
Greg, first of all, so we know where we stand, what's your involvement with this members and supporters' ability to be able to raise money?
Well, first of all, before we start that, Brian, I think that you've taken a big chance out of me on your program, because as far as myself and the Fitzroy people, your verbal treatment of the club and its supporters over the past 12 months has been nothing short of disgraceful.
Well, I wouldn't say disgraceful, but what I will say is I said what I thought.
Is it true that you're a declared bankrupt, Greg?
This is unbelievable.
Yes or no?
If you want to, of course not. I run a company that turns over $4 million. In 1979, Brian, what are you trying to do? Muck rake, are you?
No, I just... I just asked a very, very simple question. Just required an answer.
In 1979, I had to go into bankruptcy. I was a bookmaker at the Roses.
Are you a declared bankrupt?
No.
You're not?
No, I run a business worth $4 million a year turnover.
All right, but you can categorically say that that's not a fact. But you can categorically state that that is not a fact.
Of course it's not a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you check it out before you ran it by me?
Well, I have checked it out.
You've checked out that I'm a declared bankrupt?
No, I'm asking you the question.
Well, you knew the answer, so why did you run it by me?
I asked...
You wanted to try and get even, did you?
No. I'm asking you the question. All I asked was for an answer. You have the ability to deny or say yes.
You're like a little boy with his football. You're not getting enough kicks, so you take your footy home.
No, I've long retired, Greg, and you know of that, of course. All I'm trying to do here is that you must admit that the average person in the street is being asked here to do something for the club that involves money, that all I'm trying to substantiate is we know Dyson Horlacy, we know John Burt, we know all of them, but we're trying to establish your bona fides. We don't know who you are.
I've got nothing to hide in my life, Brian.
All right, well then I'm just asking you a simple question.
You only asked me, Brian, to try and get even.
No, I'm not trying to get even with anything. I'm just asking you the questions that, and the hard questions here that have to be asked, because you are asking for donations and pledges here. Now, it is only fair that the people out there know. If I'm going to give $10 to the cause of Fitzroy, I want to know exactly who's administering and where it's going.
All right, well, I'll tell you that I was a bankrupt in 1979, which everyone at the Fitzroy Football Club knew about. I was discharged in 1982, and since then, I've worked at the Essendon Football Club in the marketing division, and I've resurrected my business life to the tune of a business that turns over $4 million. Now, who is without anything in their past cast the first stone. Are you able to do that, Brian?
I'm certainly not.
Maybe I should run a check on you.
Please do, because I can categorically say here that I'm not a declared bankrupt, of which you have now admitted. But I'm not asking for the money, Greg. That's the situation. And you've spent the last 5 minutes trying to defend yourself, and you lied to me. You lied to me when I asked you the question.
Small in mind.
Well, you didn't answer the question as correctly, and I'm glad you've clarified the situation now, because now we know who you are. Thank you to Greg. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much for your time there, and thank goodness we finally got to the bottom of that.
Jeez, so all the oxygen went out of the room, Brian.
Wasn't as funny as the others, but wow.
Jim, all that happened before 6 a.m.
I know.
You heard the time call? 24 to 6. How'd you get him on before 6?
It was up past 5, wasn't it?
Bristol, you would have turned that around. That would have run later in the show as well. You would have backed that up again.
I don't know where it ran. I didn't even know I did that.
Once he got the answer he wanted, didn't he go for the jugular after he got him? It was like he had him on the ground and pinned his throat to the floor.
Being the good sports, wasn't a lot of other sport involved in that conversation, was there? Yeah,
Brian's asked him to establish his bona fide. You must have prepared that before, Bristol. It's one of the questions you wanted to ask.
Type of wording, is it?
Did you get a bit worried when he asked you about your past?
I was a little concerned.
did you think he may have had something in his back pocket?
Well, yes, you had to be careful there.
Yeah, I like it. Brian,
of the raffles.
Another dimension of the interviewing stylings.
A little uncomfortable. A little edgy on my seat there, but I don't even remember that. I don't know where that's come from.
There were a couple more.
And at one stage, I noticed you got a little uncertain, so you strung about 5 U's together. Yeah. You. Which we've all done, by the way. I've done it too. You're just getting that next question ready, but it's not quite ready.
Especially if it comes back with something. Where do I go now?
It's 24 to 6.
So later that day, this is where we need to go, all right? So that was hard hitting. That's 5:36 a.m.
Yep.
Was when that started, that interview with a man called Greg.
Finished at 7:05.
Our man, Brian, later that day, Duck, played for Paran. And a lot of people forget after his glorious career with Richmond and Collingwood, he then went and captain coached Paran. Mm-hmm. And that was tumultuous.
I covered this season in question.
Tumultuous. The way that the Paran and Bristol story sort of unfolded. Oh. So later that day, Brian's gone out and played. Reported twice, as I understand it.
Same day.
And sent off by an umpire.
The same day.
And we've got some audio of the commentary from that game. Have a listen. Oh.
Taylor's broken loose on the lead. Grits the teeth and takes out McTaggart. And Height gives him one to go on with. Glenn Height doesn't mind getting in there. Taylor's had his name taken.
He hit the ball as well.
Exactly. That's just ridiculous. Ribble.
Oh, and that wasn't nice either. This is getting very ugly. That's not nice.
No. Taylor was late on the push on McTaggart, but I honestly do not believe that was reportable.
Taylor's reported again, possibly for that later incident.
I don't know. The umpires, you know, they've got a job to do.
Here we go. Well, there's safety in numbers because the goal umpire's going to be in there as well. Three coming down to tell Brian Taylor he has to leave the field. We have the umpires wired for sound, but I think it's best that we don't hear, to tell you the truth, because I'm sure Taylor will be livid.
It was a great sight seeing the three umpires march down to the goal square to say, excuse me, Brian, but look,
it was almost like an execution.
Excuse me, Mr. Taylor.
Yes.
Bristol.
Yeah, I was escorted off.
Bristol, you headbutted someone in that exchange.
I think I did, yeah.
You did?
I think I did.
No, you did.
I think I did. But I
worked up.
I didn't want to go off, but they you know, they wouldn't start the game until I did.
And obviously, so. This being a non-visual medium right at the moment, Jim, the umpires in question, they actually went down en masse because yes. One was too scared to do it by himself. It by so himself. They went, all of them, two goal umpires, two field umpires, two boundary umpires.
Before the last quarter
started. And they were scared talking to you. And yes. Your credit, though, you did just run off.
They surrounded me and escorted me off.
Yeah. You did argue the call, though.
I did. Well, they were wrong.
Hey, Bristol.
How many weeks?
Four.
Can't remember.
Four.
Did the interview from earlier in the day have anything to do with your truculence?
Might have got me in the wrong frame of mind. I mean, at stage. Five forty.
And you're
24-6.
Captain coaching the same day. Oh, brilliant. We go to an interview recorded a little earlier on the John Longmire shortly before we do, Damo.
Yeah, the feedback on @MMFooty Gym on all social media platforms. Justin Bird, BT, clearly just took revenge on the footy field for Greg giving him the Jimmy Grits. Big Tanker, old Harding Brian, going with the tough questions, not even changing the tone of his voice.
No.
Stewie Alexander, hard-hitting Brian, and Brad Cook. And this is a sentiment that's reflected across a lot of the mentions here, Jim. Do-a-diddy-diddy. Still gets me. That was the previous week when That's you it. Threw to the song on Valentine's Day. Do-a-diddy.
All right. I said earlier that the coach of the Sydney Swans was obviously very busy leading up to the game, so we had to grab him before we actually went to air. So take a listen to our interview with John Longmire from the Swannies.
Great, James, boys.
Four of the last five, you'd be happier, I reckon, with where your Swans are positioned.
Yeah, look, over the last 5 weeks, we're certainly playing a better brand of footy a bit more consistently, and there's no doubt about that. We understand that after a really slow start that we haven't got much room for error, and we need to keep playing really good footy.
Footy clubs never make personnel an excuse, but I guess we can at least make it a reason for you. You couldn't get your best team out there for the first 6 or 7 weeks. Are you starting to get better in that department, happier anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we debuted six players in the first 6 weeks, and we knew that. We knew we had, on top of the seven that we had played their first game last year, so we knew we had a younger team, different personnel those first few weeks, but we've been able to get a few players back, and most importantly, though, we've been able to play a better brand of footy, particularly without the ball.
So what about the Tigers, Johnny? What does your intel tell you about them?
BT, they're playing a terrific brand of footy. They're quick. They've got fantastic small forwards. They put enormous pressure on in their front half. They're really valuing that. They've got some defenders in absolutely ripping form, and they've got probably one of the better players in the competition at the moment, in Dustin Martin. So they're really consistent, even brand of footy built upon a fierce desire and pressure the opposition.
Hey, Horse, you played them here last year, and there was the famous kick after the siren where you lost that game. How much different are they playing from that point to this point? Because their style of footy is so much different from us sitting up there, but you obviously analyse it a lot closer.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, every team evolves from year to year and throughout the year as well. You can change a little bit, but they certainly are changing. And you know, full credit to them, it's been working. Obviously, to be in the top four at the moment, they are changing a little bit with the way they go about it. But particularly their pressure on the opposition, that's been a real standout.
And everyone's talking about taggers again, Horse. I can't believe they are because they're boring and all that they do is just a stopping job. But you went with one last week on Johannesson and you got the job done. And it was seemed to be, I mean, you obviously had, I was actually away, but you had someone that played tight on him. But it seemed to be a real team focus to put him under extreme pressure. Do you think of something similar today with those guys you mentioned, Koch and Martin?
Well, I mean, the really difficult thing about those guys around the ball, they're good in the contested situation and they're around the ball consistently. I mean, Dustin Martin's probably as good as there is in a one-on-one. So, you know, it's one thing to have a player on him, but another thing to try and beat him. And, you know, generally it gets down to a midfield group versus midfield group, but you know, we can't allow him too much space around the stoppages as is Cochin, because if they get a little bit of space, they can really get their overlap running game going. That's what we can't afford for them to do.
And just on the specific matchups today, John, do you expect Rance to go to Franklin?
Well, look, obviously, you know, it's a challenge enough, Damo, picking our team and working out the matchups, let alone trying to pick Richmond's team. But I expect that'll happen a fair bit. There's no doubt he's an absolute gun player. But as Damien mentioned during the week, their other tall defenders are doing a pretty good job as well.
So what do you do then? That interests me, Horse. If they put Asprey to Buddy and they try and do what Geelong did with the Scarlet for so many years, and that's let the other big defender do his own thing in Alex Rance, will you then set someone for him? Or will you just allow that to unfold?
Oh, well, we'll see how the game goes, James. I mean, it's, you know, we have some strategies that we can go to during the course of the games, but at the start, you just want to see how it unfolds and have a couple of things up your sleeve if you need to adjust on the fly. But we'll wait and see. I mean, Lance generally gets up on the ground, he gets deep, he goes you know, all over the place. So we'll just have to get a feel for what the Tigers defenders are doing.
John, you obviously got your season back on track after those early six losses back in round seven, but you then lost to Hawthorn and had the break. Did you do anything specifically to address what had happened in that first chunk within the break before you came out and played the Bulldogs?
Oh, look, we turned the season around before the break. Obviously, we had three wins in a row before that Hawthorn game. So it was really just the Hawthorn game that we dropped away a bit, and we lost that in the last kick, really, or not the last kick, but virtually the last kick. So you know, we felt as though we turned it around before the break, and which we had. And we had 4 days off just after our last game before the break, and then we got back into it pretty quickly. We trained over the weekend, leading into a Thursday game, and prepared as best we could. And, you know, we felt that the opposition last week and the Bulldogs probably had a little bit of personnel out as well, which helped us, and they lost a player during the course of the game. But we thought our fifth attack in the footy was of a pretty high standard.
Hey, Horse, just to go back to Franklin, obviously still arguably the best big forward in the game. How important is it when you, and he is such a beacon, and you, when your players look up through the middle of the ground, they see him lead, they want to go to him. How important is it that the other forwards lead to dangerous places and they don't just lead for the sake of leading? Is that something that you are always talking about?
Oh, geez, it's like that in North Melbourne in the 90s, Duck. when you look up and you tend to kick it to a bloke who tends to take most of the forward options.
Are you talking about yourself, Horse?
Yeah. Or
Fridge Roberts?
Yeah, or the blokes that do the dummy leads to make sure that they get out of the way of the big fella. fancy that. Probably have a bit of experience in that over the years to make sure
Come on, Horse. I played your puppet for the first six years and then it got reversed a little bit later.
Oh, look, it is very—it's very difficult when you when you're up the ground and you understand. You know, he's a big presence in the forward half. There's no question about that, and as he should be. I mean, he's huge, he's quick, he's got a big booming voice. He leads with his arms out, so it's pretty hard to ignore him. But you know, we felt that Sam Reed, in particular, has been growing in that area as far as another option forward for us. He took 7 contested marks last week. Will Hayward, those guys are providing another option for us, so it is important to share the load around, and Lance himself is very good at that. He's very good at his goal assists.
Hey, Horse, we've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much. Good luck today.
Good on you. Thanks, guys.
Joining Duck in the special comments chair is Nick Riewoldt, superstar of the St Kilda Footy Club, who were too good for the Kangas last night. Welcome, Rui.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
How'd you pull up, first of all?
Yeah, I pulled up well. Pulled up well, obviously a little bit better after a win, but just good to get back out there. The 3 weeks off, 2 including the bye. So, yeah, no, I feel good, feel better for the run. And not 9 day break now to turn it around.
And 6-6, Gold Coast and Freo to come. So it's a pretty good position to attack, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're the games really. When you look at the way the ladder's set up, you need to beat the teams around you if you want to be playing in September. So the next month of footy for us will give us a pretty good indication of what we'll be doing come September.
Given the previous three matches had been losses, Nick, you therefore don't need to worry about the aesthetics of it. But as a player last night, in that game itself, were you aware that it wasn't of the greatest standard for the viewer?
That's probably putting it mildly, Damo. But, yeah, no, we understood it was a pretty scrappy game last night. And you said we don't need to really concern ourselves with the aesthetics. But if you're playing a good brand of footy, then I guess that goes hand in hand with the way it looks. And for us, the previous 3 weeks weren't as much about the results as they were about the way we were actually playing. We just weren't playing the style of footy that we play when we're playing our best and the sort of footy that stands up regardless. So for us to get back last night to a bit more of the style that we want to play, certainly didn't execute as well as we would have liked from a skill perspective at times, but I think we played with a bit of dare. We played a more exciting brand. It was just the execution at times that let us down a little bit.
You spoke about your dare. I thought early in the game, you're obviously trying to come back through the corridor, but early in the game you went back to some contested situations, but you won those contested situations. There was a big one early where Sammy Gilbert took a contested mark, then played on, got the ball inside 50. Then there was another occasion you did the same thing. But you won those contests, and I think that's what gave you then confidence to say, okay, we can do this.
Keep kicking it into the middle.
But you lose those, the ball goes to the other end of the ground and you can be scored against. But you had the courage to do it early and it paid off.
Yeah, it did. And you can have all the structures in the world and play a fast and exciting brand, but unless you win contests, that's the one thing, I guess, that hasn't changed in the last 30 or 40 years with footy. If you win contests, you usually win the game.
Is the most, and you're a great mark, arguably one of the best marks we've ever seen, is the most important mark on the footy field, that mark that goes down the line, that contested mark that you can take, that no one expects you to take because you're in a pack situation, then the whole game opens up, the 50 opens up, you can play on quickly and move the ball inside 50.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think most of the time, because you are outnumbered in that play down the line, so to be able to gain possession in an outnumbered situation where you're not expected to mark it or win the footy, that means you've got extra blokes probably in the corridor. So you're really able to slingshot off that play, and we were able to win a few of those last night.
And having the right players to slingshot, because Brown and Carlisle are doing such a good job, it's allowing the likes of Robertson, Montagna, Webster, the really good executors of the kickback inside, to be on the end of it rather than be, trying to contest for in a position where they're having to take bigger guys.
Yep. Nick, Paddy McCartan missed last night with a knee complaint. Do you have an update on his status? And is it possible that he could be added to the forward line that was in play last night from a big band perspective? Obviously yourself and therefore Bruce and Membry.
Yeah, I haven't got an update medically. He had a scan, I think, yesterday, so clearly we were preparing for the game. But I understand it's on the lower end of the scale. I think they were initially a little bit worried that it might have been a little bit sinister, I think was the coach's words. But, look, we've played with the four of us, Brucey and Tim Membry, myself and Paddy, before. I've usually slid up to the wing and with Brucey going through the ruck, so that's a possibility.
Mate, for me, the pressure was back. That's what I noticed, especially in that first 40 minutes. We'd done, I reckon, a couple of the St Kilda games in the last run of three, and it had gone. It had evaporated from the start of the year, and therefore you were getting touched up on the back of it. But the first 40 minutes, I thought the pressure was brilliant.
Yeah,
I didn't think North Melbourne handled it at all well.
Well, you need to be able to do both. You need to be able to apply it, and you need to be able to handle the opposition's pressure. And North's pressure last night was really good as well. But I think on the night we just handled the pressure game a little bit better than they did. For us, our pressure the previous 3 weeks at the source was really good, but once it got outside of that little scrimmage, that bubble, then it sort of fell away. But I thought all over the ground were able to cover for each other really well.
And you're just Scotty Thompson and yourself there, Rui, at some stage, just introducing yourself to Scooter, who's one of the more affable players to play the game.
Yeah, he's a really good bloke on the field, not a pest at all, but there wasn't much in that. I think we should both be okay.
A little fine maybe coming your way?
Maybe a fine at worst.
I think he takes it personally if someone doesn't belt him every game, Scooter. He's not doing his job if someone doesn't clip him.
Hey, how about yourself? Did you pull up okay?
Yeah, pulled up well.
Got the benefit of the 3 weeks off?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, in hindsight, I think we said we probably should have taken a week a little bit earlier, but just got on top a bit of that bone stress, which was, you know, really unrelated to some of the other issues that I've had. And, yeah, and I was able to get a good block of training in as well and was running on top of the ground last night, so all good.
As you're probably aware, if you listen to BT and I, we're fascinated with guys' goal kicking and you know, whether they're a good kick or a bad kick. I've watched most of your career, and I reckon there was a stage where you went through, and clearly we know that you've your problems with your knees and stuff like that. There was a stage where I thought you lacked penetration in your kicking, and then I reckon the last 5, 6, 7 years you have been, and when I say that, I mean from outside 50, it was beyond you. Then you went through a phase where outside 50 was no worries at all. Right now, you've hurt your knee a little earlier this year.
Cut to the chase, Duck.
Well, I'm about to get to it. Do you think your penetration right now, because of the knee problem you had early, is not where it was, say, last year, the year before that?
Yeah, oh, potentially. I mean, but prior to last night, my kicking this year had been really good. I think I'd kicked 17-4, yep. which is a career-high accuracy rate coming into last night's game. I just didn't kick them that well last night. You know, probably the first one you know, BT, we spoke about this last week,
yep.
On the radio about I should have just run out and opened the angle up and snapped it around the corner. I know you don't like that, Duck. You think it's a cop-out, but, you know, I'm much more higher percentage of doing that. But I went back and kicked the drop punt and, you know, the next two shots weren't great either.
Hey, while we've got Nick here and, of course, Duck on fire as well, the issue of runners during the week, Damo, has been a little bit of an issue. And it's just interesting. In the modern game, there are 90 interchanges per game. The coaches have three breaks to get to the players. Do you think as a player you need a runner these days?
Oh, less than you have in the past. I think far more rotations than there used to be when the runners, I think, were more prevalent, delivering messages, changing positions. But guys spin on and off the bench so quickly now, I don't think it would be a huge adjustment, and if you change the rules, the players just will adjust. They'll carry messages out with them, and yeah, I don't think we necessarily need them.
Really, I know the coaches are going to be canvassed about this when perhaps Gill next meets them, and yep. They're going to be asked their opinion. What about this? What about runners can only go on the ground when there's a goal kick? So there's 45 seconds ad break, right, before the ball is bounced next. So they have 45 seconds to get out and deliver the message. They're not on TV. They can't affect play because they're not in the motion of play.
I don't mind that.
Why can't that happen?
Well, Bill Brownless mentioned that during the week, and he must have heard it from someone because there's no way he's smart enough to have brought that up.
You haven't heard it from... really, have you?
The thing they do in the NFL to call plays is they hold signs up, you know, facing the players out towards the ground, and that has no impact on the other team or the space on the ground. But
we did that one year in the AFL, and it got banned.
It's been outlawed, so that might be...
But further to your point, Bristle, I like it, and I don't think the runner then necessarily has to come back through the gates.
No.
So he's got 30 seconds, come off on the boundary. You can have two runners, they can work their way back around until there's another goal kicked, and then the two of them can come out in that 30 seconds. It makes sense to me because it's a bad look, in my view, to have him out on the ground all the time.
Our runner would probably appreciate it because he just gets an ear bashing
That's what I wanted to ask you. How much of a runner, how much of it is constructive these days? Like, is he actually coming out? Most of the time it's...
How much tactical, how much encouragement?
Exactly, right. Is it encouragement? I'll tell you, oh, you know what, you weren't quite in the right spot or whatever. Because generally, I agree with you, and, you know, and BT, I'm pretty sure you had a great relationship with not only your own runner, but the opposition runners. Well, you did. That's all they cop was a bashing. They come out. Yeah. Before the runner even got to you, you'd say,
Duck,
mate, you come here,
Duck.
And you're going to turn around and run back to the boundary.
You were the only one in the competition that sent return messages, Mark. Yeah. No one else.
You tell Dennis.
No, but they do. So they still cop a bashing from the players. And answer BT's question, because it was a good one. No. Oh, that's what I was trying to say, but
I'd say it'd be about 50-50, positional, structural, and, you know, words of encouragement or, you know, the opposite. I don't necessarily think we need them. I don't think they play a vital role.
Luke Hodge on Triple M Footy last night on the huddle pre-match has a differing view on this topic, though. Nick?
They come out with some pretty important messages. If you need to change the way you're playing, there is a lot of things going on in AFL players' heads today, whether it's structure, whether it's you're running to a certain play, whether you're swapping from mid to forward to back. I think people overreact. Yes, Nick Maxwell spent a lot of time, and it was just may have been a coincidence that it was in the same spot for every kick-in that GWS were defending. But I still think people have overreacted to it. But I still think they're vital for what they do for the coaches and how they help the players, especially with the younger players that we've found out at the moment.
No, Hodgie, this has been going on for years, and there have been other runners, not just Nick Maxwell, and we need to address it because it's just not a good look.
I've had a good look at, I've looked at the vision of where Nick was standing, and the leader, he was standing in the wrong spot, and they got beaten by a car.
Oh, he likes that, BT.
I do. No, I do, BT would like it. That's why I said it.
You would probably be playing at the club at the same time, Duck. My older brother, when he was at North, Arnold Brightus was the runner. And Arnold Brightus used to pick fights with the opposition players. Anyone who looks sideways at him, he goes, right, let's go. He forgot that he was actually out there to deliver a message.
Our old trainer, Kenny Whiffen, who was a runner in the 66 Premiership and was eventually the head trainer, he shaped up with Jose Romero. A few years ago. I don't know if you remember old Kenny, but he had a big boxing background, and he was shadow boxing Jose in a skirmish one day.
Had a guy by the name of Jackie King down there at North Wales, and he'd shape up and give you.
Well, Jackie was meant to run out with the water, and you're right, but he wouldn't mind. Dennis Pagan, when you were injured or suspended, I got to sit up in the box and watch, and he spent half his time bagging the runner. He's called, look at Mr. Magoo. He doesn't know where he's going. Put a pair of, he had prescription glasses, but he thought he'd just put a bit of a tint over them one day, and then I said, is he wearing sunglasses? Who does he think he is, Jack Nicholson?
he wasn't a sunglass fan, Dennis, was he, at any time with anyone? What do we got, Bristol? Something you don't know?
Yeah, something you don't know here, JB. Now, it's car park issues have been a long issue of the Triple M box.
Yes.
Not for you.
Got the two boys here, and they didn't get one today, of course. But you and I got them, JB.
You get one because I allow you one.
what I know.
You get an official one today, BT.
But anyway, when you employ royalty, like we have at Triple M with Chris Judd, he's now a member of the Triple M team, you would think that he'd get the royal ride.
Yes.
And get the ticket handed to him for the MCG because it's particularly hard here. And
particularly on a big game.
Queen's birthday Monday. Yep. You just can't get him. It's very, very difficult. Right. Sounds like you know about this too, Damo.
Yes.
I think I'm with you on this.
But it's said that our producers, the one with the big snorkel.
Yes. Yeah. Tunnel Cliff.
What? It's said that he's he had it instead of Snorkel has taken the car pass instead of the royal writer.
He should be on the bus.
It's an absolute disgrace. When Juddy finds out, he'll know now because he'll be listening.
Yep.
You'll be in trouble, Snorkel. Now, the other one, of course, it's about you, Damo.
Oh, hello.
There's a big business and sport lunch going on, biggest thing at Crown next week going on. It's a very big affair with the
function.
Mervyn Swerving there, Robbie Kearns, former Storm star, and Nicole Livingston's going as well.
Australian Swimming Superstar, yep.
Big event.
Yeah.
I'm just, and heading all of those big names, and they're pretty good at the talk game, is our one and only Damo.
He's MC? He's
going MC.
No!
And part of the MC duties going one-on-one with the head of the AFL, Gillon McLachlan. Pictures of Merv on the promo, no pictures of Kearns or Livingston. Big picture of Damo going head-to-head with Gillon McLachlan.
When is it again?
Wow. I don't know. It's at Crown and it's soon.
Okay.
And
I'll let you know how it goes.
And the folding, how's
MC.
It?
MC. We sent Chua into the MC space and it didn't work well. He got bounced out of there very quickly.
And I'm tipping the same could happen with Damo. Because I'm just not sure in front of 1,500 people at the casino in the Crown Palladium, lovely room, whether you can hold them.
I don't think I'm emceeing.
What will be your first line?
Unless you know something I don't know.
What is your opening line?
I don't think I'm emceeing, so I won't need to worry about it.
Good evening and welcome to the sport lunch. Then what are you going with?
I could go down the path that you went down with that Greg bloke on 927, the good sports before.
Bristol, we need to let you go because Nick Floston's got to come in and chat to us about the Richmond Footy Club. This is a big day for them. They take on the Sydney Swans at their home ground Saturday afternoon. It doesn't get any better, and they're in nice shape, the Tigers. So we're going to find out from their injured star exactly how they're tracking today. Nick, welcome to you.
Thanks, Amy.
Just jumped into the Bristol's chair. You'd be nice and comfortable there.
The seat would be real warm.
Nice and warm.
Now, what's going on with you? For everyone who doesn't know, why aren't you playing? When are you playing again?
Yeah, so against Western Bulldogs, I just landed on the shoulder a bit awkwardly and fractured my shoulder blade. So there's about an inch crack. So, yeah, just wait until
Geez, that's an unusual injury. I've never heard of it. Yeah. Cracked shoulder blade.
Yeah, shoulder blade.
So how long?
Well, it's been 6 now, but should be right to go next week. So our physio's only seen 2 in 15, 20 years, how long he's been there. So.
Are you a straight back in man, do you think? Have you just wandered past Dimmer and said, look, I reckon in a week's time I should be good to go?
Don't know. It depends how they go today. I reckon it's charged hard to change a winning team. So.
Now, you're rocking the real wood chopper beard type get up. Has that been a 6-week job or how much work's gone into that?
Nah, this is nab one. I got this, copped some stitches in the chin, so I wasn't allowed to shave for a couple of weeks and then got them out. And then a day later, I got knocked out and more stitches in the chin against West Coast. So. I had to keep it for about 6 weeks, and now there's a couple of boys jumping on at the club, so there's a couple of us growing them.
So fill us all in. A lot of talk. Lloydy's copied my article today from Friday about the Tigers.
There's a bit of that going around.
About the Tigers and how good they've been and how much of a turnaround, but more importantly, the way you guys play. Now, we know you played finals 3 years in a row. You missed last year, but it's just a completely different way that you go about playing. You're taking the game on, you know, you're kicking the ball, you're moving the ball more quickly. How much time did you put in over the summer to change that? And, you know, all that rubbish that takes 2 years to get used to a game plan and all that sort of stuff. You've done it very quickly.
Yeah, it's probably the personnel change that led to that. So we've got a lot more little quick blokes in the forward line. So they're just playing their natural game. Like Rioli gets another year in him, Castagna and Butler start playing. So it's probably more the personnel change rather than the game plan, so to speak. That makes sense.
Yep. The personnel change. So Josh Caddy's playing a really interesting role. The second tall forward at Richmond has been a bit of a point of contention for probably the last 5 years, really, ever since Richo stepped away and Jack slotted into that number one spot. How's he embraced playing that role, and is there room for a bigger guy to come back in if their form warrants?
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of tall blokes injured in rehab, actually. But, Cads is kind of just filling the void, but we find we get an advantage at ground level with him down there. So as long as he can create that contest and then the ball's on the ground for the other boys. So,
what do you expect to happen today by way of manning up on Dustin Martin?
I don't know. I wasn't in the Sydney meeting.
If you were in Sydney, what would you do? Would you let him go?
It's hard to man up on him. Like, he just wins the ball around the contest. Yep. He's not really a spread 30 uncontested possession. He just wins it around the cold face, and then he's impossible to tackle even if he knows he's coming.
Just a little bit more on Dusty. He won the best and fairest last year by a vote against Rancey. It's been a completely different game by him this year, because last year, as good as he was, most of his possessions were centre back. This year it's completely different. It's centre forward. So he's changed, and that's a personnel thing, obviously, also.
Yeah, it's probably where the ball's been, I suppose. Last year we were losing a lot of games to the ball in our defensive half. This year, we're winning a lot of forward pressure as well, so Dusty's getting the ball up there a lot more, I suppose, and he's damaging kick going inside 50.
Assistant coaches, they've obviously had a really big impact coming into the club and changing that game style as well.
Yeah, Blake Carousella, Justin Lepage came back after his couple of years up in Brisbane, and then a couple of young boys, Xavier Clark. And Andrew McWalter has stepped up as well.
A couple old Saints boys there.
Oh, I heard it. Now, you've got about 40 seconds, so we need to let you go. But Alex Rance, have you ever come across a man happier with what he brings to the table visually?
Yeah, he's pretty happy with himself, but why wouldn't you be if you look like that, I suppose? Like, yeah. Pretty good looking fella.
Good luck with the shoulder. Good luck today.
Thank you.
We didn't get to all the news before. Purple, what else do we need to cover off with you?
Just to continue, watch this space on Josh Kelly, as we've been saying on Triple M Footy for a while. Jim, I have a belief that he'll stay at the GWS Giants, but until he does, it's obviously a scenario that could well change. And interestingly enough, last night, the two teams with probably the two biggest offers in front of him, Carlton being another player in this space, played a game of footy that he may well have watched and maybe thought, do I want to put myself into a situation, if it's a North perspective, if they're going through, as BT said before, a situation where they're yet to bottom out? St Kilda, do we want to go under there? So I'm not sure he would have taken a lot out of, as we said before with Nick Revel, the aesthetics of that particular game last night. Have you got any read on what North's hopes are for it?
I haven't. I know that they are desperately in need of that type of player. Last night was a perfect example of why they're chasing him so hard, because the outside sort of ability to run and use the footy, you know, that 100-metre player, they just don't have. So if you ever needed an example of why they're going so hard after him last night, was it.
Yeah, most team would love one of those type of players. They've got three.
Yeah.
Whitfield, Scully and Kelly, who we're talking about. I mean, it's it's staggering their riches.
Yeah, it is. So, but look, I'm with you, Purple. If I had to, I'm not a betting man, but if I had to bet, I'm hearing the same thing, that I think he's unlikely to go. Mm. And these are marlin fishing expeditions, aren't they? And how many times do they genuinely come off? I mean, if it's a free agent, that's different now, I reckon, Rui, because that market's changed. But when you're trying to get a young bloke out of a club to move somewhere else, one out of 20, sometimes they land.
That's right. And you have to have enough for GWS to actually let him go. He is a GWS player.
Yep.
Yeah. He can't just walk somewhere, otherwise he has to put himself into the draft. And I'm not sure he'd want to entertain that. So, yeah, no, there's obviously a lot to play out, but absolutely, all teams would love to get something like that.
Collingwood getting Treloar out of GWS was significant, but this is another level again. Yep. This is a significant high level.
Yeah, and he really wanted out too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas I don't hear that with Josh Kelly. No. I don't think he's unhappy.
And Treloar left. I mean, they played they were a kick away from a grand final as well. This group now knows that they are on the verge of, you know, potentially playing in some grand finals and possibly winning one. I think their biggest concern, GW, is when they win one. Once they win one, then players will go, you know what, I've got my premiership, now I can chase a little bit more.
Do you even think it could happen this year for not just Josh Kelly, but someone like a Devin Smith as
could
you make your decision
to be targets forever, but someone brought up a good point. I can't remember who it was, but when you sign these big deals, given that, and I know that you're just about, the CBA just about to be signed off on, but in 9 years' time, you sign these $10 million for 10 years, in 10 years' time, $1 million will be peanuts.
Well,
so why would you sign contracts worth that amount of money? You're probably doing, if you're going to be a gun, which he is going to be a gun, he's probably going, he's getting unders.
Even the buddy deal now,
he's unders.
He's looking good for Sydney, isn't it?
Yep, it is. He's only four, this is the fourth year into it, and five to go at the $1 million. But as far as we know, there's not the CPI attached to the to the deal that he's signed. So next year, he'll be getting the $1 million, but it's not what he'd be getting anywhere near if he was on the open market and being paid for what he's worth under the new CBA, which will be probably done in the next month officially. And we'll have they're going to say a 20% increase, aren't they, Nick? But it's when you factor in the elevation of the rookies into that overall list and also some other tinkering with it, it's probably going to equate to a 12 or 13%, I think, to the senior player like yourself.
Hey, Rui, can I ask you this? What would you do today if you are the Sydney Swans with Alex Rance? And the reason I ask that is because if Asprey goes to Buddy Franklin and they try and create what Geelong did all those years with Scarlett and have this amazing sort of intercept marking, huge presence, and you've got to enter 50 around him and all the rest of it, do you then put time into Rance? What do you do with him?
No, I put time into your ball use. So I try to hit Papley. I'd send Heaney forward. He's a small, but he's a good leading marking target. So I'd really put time into your ball use and almost try and drag Rance out. So start that way. Try and drag him out by just adjusting the way you hit up your players. You might not be kicking it to Franklin because no doubt they'll overplay him, but all of a sudden Rance has to maybe become a little bit more accountable. Franklin gets his one-on-ones and then you go for the jugular.
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever Rance lines up on, if it's not Buddy Franklin, you know the ball's going to go to Buddy. So that you've got that one-on-one and straight away Rance is going to pay Buddy respect. If he goes to someone else, he's not going to pay them the same respect. So the instruction straight away is if Rance plays off, let's go through his opponent. Let's make him be accountable. That's what you have to do for Rance. Doesn't matter. We know that he's a great player. So go through his opponent. Make him man up.
Purple, as we let you go, anything else you wanted to cross off?
Just on the form of Todd Goldstein, Jim. He was good last night compared with how he'd been in the previous matches this year, but not yet back to the All-Australian form, I would have thought.
I thought, and I only watched the game on telly, I wasn't there, and Rui, you were. The only thing I'm noticing with Goldie is the lack of elevation. You know, he's had this leg issue, and at times you could only just squeeze a bit of tissue paper under his feet, and he was getting out. I still thought he had the better of the ruck duel,
but
he used to be able to jump, you know, almost over your head. He had this great athletic sort of ability to get airborne. So I'm not sure he's, and I have no intel on it, by the way, but I'm not sure he's 100%.
Yeah, we put a lot of work into him, obviously, from an opposition scouting point of view, because we know he's still very good at getting his hand to it. You know, he drifted forward, kicked an important goal, particularly last quarter. They smashed us in the clearances, of which he was a really strong contributor.
Let's get down to Nez. I think you just had a chat to him on Fox Footy, Nez.
Yeah, that's right. He was a special guest on AFL Today this morning. He certainly felt that last night was a big step in his individual performance and form, but he is adamant Brisbane boys that he wants to stay with North Melbourne. He says, my heart and soul is with this club. I want to win a premiership with this club and I'm not going anywhere. So he accepts that his form hasn't been fantastic this year, but he feels like he can get back to his best.
We always say, Duck, that once you're out there, you're judged on your output, but injury is a reason, and I'm not sure he's right.
No, you're right.
I think he has been for a while.
You're right, and it's a reason every week, and that's why sometimes when we sit up here and we watch players, you know, sometimes battle, and we make judgment on them, and we don't know what they're doing from week to week. We don't know what they're carrying. I can guarantee you, given that we're round 13, there is not one player out on that field right now that is not carrying something.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.